From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. The Florida legislature is rethinking how the state moves minors into adult court. Advocates are pushing a campaign to reform a process called direct filing that gives state prosecutors the choice of moving forward with those charges. They say the system unevenly hands out penalties. But state prosecutors say they're careful with who gets those charges, and there are checks in place to make sure the appropriate sanctions are handed out. We'll discuss how the system works and what advocates want to see changed. Plus, the mood of voters is one of the most important political factors in an election year, and with voters anxious, frightened, and angry, we'll explore possible causes from financial insecurity, fears over terrorism, and immigration issues. We'll also explore Florida's recent growth in independent voters and why so many voters are choosing no party affiliation. That's ahead on Gulf Coast Live. First, this news. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Topher Forges. NPR and member stations are examining an issue at the heart of this year's election this week, the American voters' state of mind. Polls and other research suggest a growing anxiety about fundamental things, security, economic prospects, and even identity. Coming up in half an hour, Gulf Coast Live takes part in that discussion. But first, Florida is rethinking how it charges minors with adult crimes. A 2014 Human Rights Watch report says the state charges more children as adult than any other in the country. That number is about 12,000 children since 2009. The main way the state charges children as adults is through a process called direct file, and that decision is made by state prosecutors. Those who want to reform direct filing say it creates an uneven distribution of penalties for young offenders, and they say it increases the likelihood those offenders will reoffend. But state prosecutors say direct filing is a tool that helps in their mission of ensuring public safety, and that there are balances in place to make sure harsh penalties are not haphazardly handed out. Today, we discuss how this process works, its impact on young Floridians, and how the legislature is thinking of reforming this system. Joining us today are Tanya Galone. She's the managing attorney of the Southern Poverty Law Center of Florida, a civil rights group campaigning during this legislative session for direct file reform. Welcome, Tanya.
Hi.
We're also joined by Susanna Marino, whose son was charged as an adult when he was 16 years old for burglary and theft after he and other young men vandalized an uninhibited house in the Tampa Bay region. Susanna and her family's lives have been affected by these changes. Susanna, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Topher, for the opportunity.
And finally, we are joined by Paul Pullen. Paul is the assistant state attorney for the 20th Judicial Circuit, and he serves as the county court and juvenile chief. Thank you, Paul, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And you can join our conversation. Call 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. We want to hear from you. Paul, we're going to start with you. There are three different ways to, as a minor can be given an adult sanction, as I understand it. Indictment, a judicial waiver system, or direct filing. What is direct filing?
Direct filing is when the state attorney makes the decision to place the child in an adult court because they feel that those kind of sanctions are more appropriate based on the offense or perhaps the criminal history of the child who's been accused of a crime.
I was going to ask, when does a prosecutor sort of make that decision, and for what kind of crimes?
Well, there are some – with direct file, there's two types of direct file. There's discretionary direct file, and that we can do at certain ages, at 14, 15, and 16, and 17. And then there's mandatory direct files. There are instances where the legislature has already passed laws that say when a certain crimes are committed or – certain crimes are committed and there's certain prior history of that child, then it's mandatory that we put the kid into the adult system. So it can go both discretionary and be mandatory depending on what the situation is.
And what kind of crimes are we talking about?
For mandatory or discretionary?
Let's do both.
Well, for mandatory, there's four instances where you can do that. One is if the person has like a previous history of such a – like a juvenile of history of like murder, sex battery, armed robbery, certain enumerated offenses, and they have a new crime that's been charged. It's a second violent offense against persons. Then that, if they're 16 or 17-year-old, then that's required. Another instance is if they're involved in stealing a car, such as a grand theft auto, or there's a carjacking, and they're involved in it, and as a result of that stealing, there's an accident where somebody's injured or killed, and then the legislature said it's mandatory that we direct file in that instance. Another instance where it's mandatory is if they're 16 or 17 years old and they commit certain enumerated offenses like robbery, aggravated battery, something of that nature, and they have a firearm and they possess it, discharge it, or shoot somebody and injure or kill them, then it can be mandatory. And then finally, it's mandatory if they commit a forcible felony and they have three prior felony acts, which occurred at least 45 days apart, then it would be mandatory if they're 16 and 17. So those are the times it's mandatory. And then there's about 18 or so enumerated crimes, and they're the more serious crimes. They're not misdemeanor crimes, and very few property crimes, where if you commit something like a carjacking and obvious things like a homicide or something like that, robbery, then we have discretion to put that child up into the adult system. And once again, we factor in things like the seriousness of the offense, their prior history, any information the Department of Juvenile Justice will provide to us. And it's when it comes to discretionary direct file, it's something we take very serious. I think it's some of the most important decisions we make in the state attorney's office. So that's discretionary direct file.
And having that, how do you see direct filing as what purpose for you as an attorney does it serve for you in terms of how do you see it? Is it a tool? Is it a device to help you do your job? How do you see it as a mechanism of sort of law enforcement?
Yes, to all the above. We see it as really it's a community safety issue. It's obvious that whether you're an adult or you're a juvenile, there are certain crimes and certain people with histories that show that they're going to continue to offend the community, that we feel that the sanctions involved or available rather in the juvenile system are insufficient. So, and for community safety reasons primarily, and that's I think reflected in the mandatory direct file laws as well, that we put them into the adult system. And I'd add, once a child gets into the adult system, that doesn't mean the child is always going to receive adult sanctions. The law provides, with a few exceptions, that when a judge sentences somebody in adult court, they have the option of giving them adult sanctions, which could be incarceration in the prison. They can give them a youthful offender sentence, which is usually a combination of up to 6 years of probation and some sort of incarceration or boot camp. And the third thing they can do is they can give them juvenile sanctions, which would be the same as if we left it in juvenile court.
So it would just go back from adult to juvenile court.
That's right, for the what we call the disposition or the sentence most people refer to it as. And so there, we feel that as prosecutors, there is a check on what we do. And that check is the judges who hear these cases, and that if they feel that our decision wasn't appropriate and that the child has either pled or been found guilty of that crime, that felony crime we've charged them with, then that judge has that option in most situations, with a few exceptions, like for the 10-20 life kind of offenses. That judge has the discretion of putting it in the juvenile system even after we've made that decision.
We're talking about how Florida charges minors with adult crimes. Do you think it should be reformed? Call 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. I want to turn the conversation to Susanna Marino. Your son, Miguel Rodriguez, was charged with burglary and theft as an adult when he was 16. Can you briefly tell me what happened during that incident?
Well, what happened during that incident, Topher, is the fact that my son was overcharged. When the state attorney just said that they use probation is really delayed sentencing. Probation is not really a second chance. So when that happened, Miguel, there were never possessions discovered in the hands of Miguel, so he really didn't steal anything. He was charged due to association with the others.
And I just want to – what was the event in question, though? I mean, what – why was there any sort of charge put against him?
Well, like the state attorney just said, it was discretionary. And it was up to the judge, who in this case is Pasco County Judge Pat Siracusa, and himself is a former prosecutor with the highest rate of conviction in Pasco County. So, you know, in his case, he didn't have a chance of really having a second chance because the judge himself was a former prosecutor. And so not even if the state would have asked for lesser, the judge wouldn't go ahead and junk it up. And another thing that we didn't talk about here is the computation system that is used in Florida. I mean, they can manipulate those numbers to ensure that the kid is going to get, you know, a higher sentence, and he's going to be get considered as an adult.
And I just want to back up, though. So there was a, as I understand, there was a night where your son and I believe it was three other individuals who were, you know, kids, teenagers, went into a house in Tampa Bay and destroyed some property.
Vandalized.
Yeah, vandalized it. And then what happened next in that sequence? What happened to the, you know, three others, and how were those charges laid out versus what happened with your son?
Okay, well, the cases were treated individually. And so what happens is that, you know, when the kid is legally considered an adult, the involvement of the parents is completely ignored. So in this case, they went to that house, and they got caught, and you know, two other kids were completely treated differently in the sense that it was treated in juvenile court, and the outcome was completely different. 9 months probation. They're currently 20 or 21 years old right now, and, you know, everything is sealed, and they can move on with their lives. That's not what Miguel has gone through here.
And when did you find out he was being charged as an adult, and what were the reasoning that you were given that he would receive that charge?
Well, what happened is Miguel was arrested, okay, and he was taken to an adult facility. And there he was basically exposed to violent crimes by adult inmates as well. So there is a lot of consequences of this statute. It's not just you know, and a statute per se, but it's the collateral effect of all this.
And so he was at 16 taken to an adult facility. And what happened after that?
What happens after that is we spent about 4 years in court, and he was given a 5-year probation and community control, and also he needed to repay $35,000 in restitution. And so if you miss one payment, that's all it takes to break probation. You don't have to reoffend again.
And did
so
he...
in his case, he's supposed to have been home by 5 p.m. He worked across the street in a local restaurant. And he stayed to have a meal before he got home. And that was the first count. And the second count was on another occasion, there is a CVS pharmacy behind the house. And he's right on the way to come to the house, and he stopped to get a gallon of milk. That constituted enough grounds to break probation.
And what happened after that?
He was sentenced to 4 years in prison, so he's currently incarcerated.
And this is going back to him receiving those adult charges when he was 16?
Yes. And, Topher, this is a unique opportunity, and of course, I really appreciate the fact that you're asking me these questions because often the human element is removed from this subject. And I want the audience, including legislators, to know that the collateral damage goes for a lifetime. Kids are branded for life, and families are also criminalized in the process. We the families, are the victims of the over-criminalization of youth. And I would like to quote a short paragraph that Miguel sent when he says the following. He said, after two short decades on this earth, my greatest trial and tribulation, this court case, my sentencing, and now incarceration has now come to a pivotal focus for me. Seeing all the memories of friends, enemies, small successes, and an amazing amount of failures in one retrospective moment has never been so possible. At one point, this predicament would have been only a dark chapter of my life. But after these 5 years of writhing within, it has become an integral part of me as a whole. And I received this in a form of a letter from Miguel, and I take this opportunity to comment on this because this is exactly what he wrote to me.
Well, I appreciate you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And I feel grateful that I'm able to share it through your program.
And I appreciate you sharing that and, sharing Miguel's words directly. Looking forward, I understand this has had an impact on your family, to say the least. What would you like to see change? What reforms would you like to see with something like direct filing?
Well, direct file, the statute is very draconian, and it must be removed because it is completely unreasonable. And the presumption that a kid who is already an adult at 18 is really arbitrary and really dates back to the 1899s. And so I think the juvenile cases should be carefully examined by an independent committee to be smart on crime and find the balance between safety and rehabilitation, which at this point is known.
We're talking about juvenile justice reform in Florida. The state charges more children as adults than any other in the country, according to the 2014 Human Rights Watch report. Should so many kids be charged as adults? Call 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. You may send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. Tanya Galone with the Southern Poverty Law Center of Florida. I want to turn the conversation to you. Your organization is campaigning this legislative session to reform direct file. Why? What is the message of your campaign?
Thanks, Topher. The fundamental issue is just a basic due process question. Who decides whether a child should be tried as an adult? And in Florida, right now, more than 98% of the cases that get sent to adult court are selected by prosecutors alone, with no set criteria, with no transparency, with no accountability. Prosecutors alone get to decide, and the defense has no say in it, and the judge has no say in it. And we're actually one of only 14 states in the entire country that allows prosecutors to make that decision to direct file in adult court. And we're one of only 3 states that never even allow the judge to review that decision to see whether transfer to adult court was appropriate. So Florida is really an outlier, not only in terms of the numbers, but in terms of the mechanism. And direct file was created to really address sort of the most severe, heinous crimes that you could imagine. But in reality, what's happened, as you mentioned in your intro, we've seen more than 12,000 kids tried as adults in Florida since 2009. Most of those kids are charged with nonviolent offenses. We're talking about property offenses like Susanna's son, or even other property offenses, drug offenses, and some misdemeanors. There are cases where misdemeanor charges can be tried in adult court. So it's really an overuse of the adult transfer system, but more importantly, it's one that isn't transparent or impartial. I'm sure that prosecutors take great care when they decide what cases they want to send to adult court, but the bottom line is we don't think that's their role. We believe that that's a role for a judge to look at both sides and to make that determination. And part of the reason is because the harm starts very early on. You don't wait all the way to 4 years at sentencing for the harm to kick in and for the consequences to kick in. In Florida, if you're a child and you're charged as an adult, you are transferred to an adult jail intended for adults. Now, you're not supposed to be mixed in with kids, kids aren't supposed to be mixed in with adults, but what that means in many counties is that the number of kids are so few that they end up being housed in isolation. We know the president just banned the use of isolation for kids in federal facilities. It's extremely controversial because of how psychologically damaging it is, but that's happening to a lot of Florida kids right now because they're sitting in county jails in isolation. So the harms start right away. For many kids, this becomes a pressure to take a guilty plea. to give an example, we worked with a kid who would have fallen into the violent category of crimes because he punched a classmate in the jaw and broke his jaw. He was a first-time offender, and he sat in jail for a year before finally deciding he needed to go home and be with his family and took a guilty plea. So now he's a convicted felon for life, with a judge having had no opportunity to step in at the beginning and say, is this really a case that needs to go to adult court? This is not a heinous menace to society type of crime that was intended by the legislature to go to adult court.
And there's been, I've also heard this term, justice by geography, when listening to how these cases are moved throughout the state. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. So what we've seen in analyzing the publicly available data is that there are wild, wild disparities depending on where you live and who the prosecutor is on how likely it is that if you're a child, you're going to be tried as an adult. And so there are counties that are three times the state average. You're much more likely to be tried as an adult in Escambia County, where Pensacola is, or in Hillsborough or in Duval. And so we looked at that and we said, well, it's not only that there are these disparities, but because there's no system, because there's no set criteria, because there's no judge looking at it, there's no way to even that out. We don't know why a prosecutor is deciding that one child charged with burglary goes to adult court and another child charged with burglary doesn't. Even in the most serious offenses, prosecutors sometimes will decide to keep the juvenile in juvenile court and not adult court, and in another county, they come to the different conclusion. And so justice by geography is a concept that we have a system right now where whether you're going to be tried as an adult depends more on where you live than on anything else. If you had a system, which is what Florida used to have, if you had a system where the judges were deciding based on set criteria, you would have a process that everybody understands, that everybody follows, that everybody participates in, and then over time you develop a body of law, a body of case law that promotes consistency to make sure that we're applying the law evenly and equally throughout the state. We don't have that right now because we don't know why prosecutors make the decisions that they make. They use different criteria in different counties. The criteria changes when a new prosecutor comes in, and there's no check and balance on that.
So what about that point that Paul raised, though, about judges having that option of reversing those sentences back to juvenile court? Isn't that a check? Should this fall just on prosecutors to have that system of assigning those charges be redone?
That concept is really a myth that judges ultimately decide. And the reason is that the vast majority of cases, not only juvenile cases, but the vast majority of criminal cases, are resolved by agreement, by pleas. They don't go through a full trial and a full sentencing hearing. It appears on the books as though that it would work, that a judge ultimately is the one deciding sentencing, but the reality is that plea negotiations are what drive sentencing. And because the stakes are so, so high in adult court, kids are going to plead to something, whether they think they committed a crime or not, taking the chances between losing your right to vote, losing your ability to go to college, you losing employment opportunities. Many kids will take a guilty plea just to avoid all that. So that's the real process that's at work. And because we have so much power vested in the prosecutors, it's just distorted. It's distorted the system. It's not a balanced system at this point. And one of the harms that comes from that is that even kids who aren't sent to adult court are still being harmed, because if they could be sent to adult court, they're negotiating pleas with prosecutors to avoid being sent to adult court and taking placements in juvenile facilities that they may not even need, that aren't appropriate for them, but there's so much pressure to resolve the case because of all the harm that can come from adult court. And it's really that process is what drives sentencing. It's not like you see in the movies where you go through the trial and then a judge decides at the end.
Paul?
Yeah, I've heard the argument before that prosecutors use that as a tool, that either you plea in juvenile court or you go to adult court. And more often than not in that situation, and it's occurred here in our county, it is the defense attorney that is approaching us with not us approaching them, saying, hey, we know that this kid who's got this prior record or committed this serious offense, you might be considering for adult court. they come to us more often, or just as often, and they say to us, how about you give us the discovery, we'll look it over, and if it looks like it's a solid case, we'll talk to our client about going forward and entering the plea just to keep it in juvenile court. So it's not always this strong-arming that's going on out there. Oftentimes it's being initiated by the defendant himself.
And we don't have much time left for this portion of the segment. I just wanted to touch briefly on what is happening currently in the legislature. There are a few different bills that will affect direct filing. There's one, HB 129, which will eliminate the mandatory direct file, among other things. Tanya, I wanted to just take a quick pulse on how you feel about the current legislative session in terms of the bills that are being proposed to talk about direct filing.
Sure. So House Bill 129 and Senate Bill 314 are the matching, or began as the matching bills to reform direct file. House Bill 129 has cleared the Criminal Justice Subcommittee, and Senate Bill 314 has passed the Criminal Justice Committee in the Senate. So they've each cleared a substantive committee. The main differences right now is that the House bill makes some tweaks around direct file, but really leaves the current system in place because it doesn't involve judges in the transfer decision. Senate Bill 314 allows prosecutors still to direct file a number of offenses, but requires in all other cases for the prosecutors to go through a judge and allows judges to review the decision when prosecutors direct file a case in adult court. So we think Senate Bill 314 is really the one that strikes the right balance, preserves direct file, preserves the ability for prosecutors to transfer kids to adult court, but puts back the due process that's missing.
And Paul, this is obviously going to be affecting you if these bills go through. Do you have any ones that you're particularly leaning towards or thoughts?
There are a lot of bills out there. What I would like to add to what Ms. Galone just said, probably have some common ground on this. One of the proposals, and I'm looking at House Bill 129, is for something that we've never had before, and that's what we call blended sentencing, and that is where a child would be given essentially a juvenile sanction up front, which would be usually a commitment, and then if they successfully complete that juvenile sanction, that commitment program, and maybe any aftercare, then they don't have all the adult adjudications and so forth. But if they violate that commitment, then the judge would have the option upon a violation of probation would have the opportunity then to impose adult sanctions such as youthful offender or incarceration. So there is some common ground, I think, being reached with this idea of blended sentencing, which is being tossed around.
Okay, and that is
sorry. I can't agree with that, but I know you're probably short on time.
If you want to take just 30 seconds.
Sure. Blended sentencing is supposed to mitigate the effects for really young kids who end up in the adult system. The proposal that's out there right now would actually widen the net by putting more kids on adult probation. And like what happened with Susanna's son, when you're on adult probation, unlike juvenile, it's very easy to violate and very easy to land in prison. So we would not support that current proposal.
Well, there is still plenty of time left in the legislative session as well, so a lot of these bills, I'm sure, may look very different as we get closer to the end of it. That is all the time that we have for this segment today. I'd like to thank my guests for being with us. Tanya Galone is the managing attorney for the Southern Poverty Law Center of Florida. Susanna Marino is the mother of a child who, at 16, was tried as an adult. And Paul Poland is the assistant state attorney for the 20th Judicial Circuit, who serves as the County Court and Juvenile Chief. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
After this break, we'll be back with an examination of the American voters' state of mind. Polls and other research suggest a growing anxiety about such things as security, economic prospects, and even identity, as voters in Florida are tending to change to no party affiliation. Stay with us. This is WGCU NPR for Southwest Florida. I'm Topher Forges.